John, somebody who's very helpful to us doing our job because he's so insightful, Jeremy Hefner, the pitching coach of the Mets, joins us on the show.
Yeah, I think we have two great pitching coaches and two guys who are, as you said, very insightful here with Matt Blake with the Yankees and certainly with Jeremy Hefner with the Mets. He saw something in Severino in spring training. He saw something in Reed Garrett, and he's good. He's good, and I'm anxious to talk to him about all of that.
I won't go off on a rant for all the idiot teams that don't let their coaches talk to players when you recognize how valuable it is to fans when someone like Jeremy Hefner and Matt Blake talk and fill up everybody's knowledge.
There are teams
But
that don't let the coach. I didn't even know
you didn't
that.
know that? You got to get out a little more, John. There's a lot of
I
teams who don't make
talked
their
to
coaches
everybody. Nobody
available.
stopped me
I
yet, but
know. That's the thing. I try to tell writers from other cities, be bolder, just go up and start talking to
or
people. But
don't know the
whatever.
rules, or
In
don't know
our
the rules.
City, those coaches are available and they are very, very helpful to do the job. So you'll see that when you hear Jeremy on our show. John and I will also talk about what we think are major observations of the first month of the season. We'll play hit and error at the end if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
There's a Yankee story you're accustomed to hearing. This is not that Yankee story.
The 1990 Yankees.
It was rock bottom.
A horror show. A laughing stock.
There was a ballplayer who brought live cougars into the clubhouse.
I was in a relationship with Mel Hall at the age of 15.
Are you kidding me? How was that acceptable?
This is the Yankee story they don't like to tell.
It really was the Bronx Zoo.
Bronx Zoo 90. Crime, chaos, and baseball. Streaming now. Only on Peacock.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
John, a month has gone past. We talk about it every year. Just it takes a while when you're in spring training until the season begins, and then all of a sudden it's flying. Obviously, a game every day, and now a month into the book. And we thought it would be a good time maybe to reflect a little bit. We've got to do this five more times to complete the 6 month season. But if I were to play the game, let's bounce it back and forth a little. Your top observation after a month of the 2024 season.
Yeah, I'm going to pay tribute to Mookie Betts. I mean, I think the guy has been incredible. You know, the leadoff hitter who leads in OPS. You don't see that very often. He obviously leads in hits, runs, batting average, on base, you know, multiple categories throughout MLB. And while he's learning a new position, I know he came up originally, that came up to the majors, but was drafted as a shortstop. That didn't last, went right to second, went to right field where he was one of the best in the game, along with Judge and a couple of others, but one of the best in the game. Played second well last year. Now was switched to shortstop within 2 weeks of the season. And I mean, there were a lot of people expecting him to fall on his face. A lot of other people expecting it to affect his offense. Not only has it not affected his offense, he's been better than ever. And even though Ohtani's got, you know, all those hard hits and the doubles and all the extra base hits, Betts is the clear MVP in the league through a month. Just an incredible, incredible start by Mookie Betts. And the Dodgers are fun. They're fascinating. I was out there. It's a terrific scene right now, but right now, he's the best player in baseball.
Yeah, you know, I was going to, I'll skip over him. I was going to mention the Dodgers in general, Betts in more specific. And look, I'll do it. Is Ohtani, I mean, to your point, Betts is the National League MVP after a month. He's probably the MVP of the whole sport after a month. But that's really saying something when somebody has 22 extra base hits in about 30 games, like Ohtani does. He's 5 for 5 in steals. He's got over 1,000 OPS. We were wondering what the offense, not that it was ever bad, might look like totally liberated from him having to pitch. I'm wondering if we're starting to look at an 80 or 90 extra base hit season from him. Could he get to 100? I don't know. He's at 22 after a month. It would be remarkable. And again, let's not ignore it. He was also wrapped up in a while here, and who knows how far out of it he is in this gambling situation with his former translator. I don't still know if we fully heard him say everything he needs to say on this subject, but he has risen above it. He has compartmentalized it at the least. And the Dodger offense is really, really good. And obviously Betts and Ohtani are the engines to that. Then you add Freeman and Smith and Muncy and Teoscar Hernandez. And man, they're going to be hard to deal with all season. And Glasnow is pitching as well as he ever has right now. And Yamamoto has caught on after that first bad start in Korea. And you just wonder, without another team over 500 in that division as we speak, are the Dodgers just going to sprint to 100 and win it by 20?
Yeah, I mean, they're an amazing team. We knew that going in. Yamamoto now showing that he may actually be worth that $325 million. Glasnow, I was concerned about that buy because he never thrown more than 125 innings. He's been brilliant. He looks like a Cy Young candidate, although Ranger Suarez is probably the leader right now. It's really amazing. And quickly on Ohtani, I would like to see, and I wrote about this for the Post, I would like to see him open up and be more trusting. It was ironic or sad that the one guy he trusted with everything, not just his thoughts, but his bank accounts and everything else, appears to be a crook. And, these guys who've come all the way from Japan to cover him, they get nothing. They get a pregame bow, which is, basically like a handshake, the Japanese, and then after the game, if he something important in the game, he'll talk about the game. He seems intelligent. He does seem engaging. He talks to his teammates. So we know he does know English pretty well. And you hear that in meetings now. He's really opened up with a new interpreter who is not a crook. Things are going better around the team. And they say it's going to open up a little bit more, but I'd like to see him open up. So I gave more on that than I should. But top of that offense, amazing. I mean, Will Smith has been incredible as well. And obviously, we know Freeman's one of the best five or six hitters in baseball. So
if I would throw in an open check. So what's a second observation from the month? What else stands out to you?
What stands out to me is that all the teams in the Central are playing well. Right now, as we do this, six Central teams would be in the playoffs. I would have thought it's going to be one in each Central division, right? The winner will get to be in the playoffs, and they'll be fortunate to be in the playoffs because they'll be the worst team. And we've seen that for years. Right now, you've got six teams that in the Central divisions that would qualify, and more than that, have been good. And I'm a little shocked that the West divisions have been so bad. So my surprise of the first half is that, you've got all these teams on the rise, like the Tigers and the Guardians and the Reds and Brewers are doing well. I think the Cubs are actually good. And then you've got the West teams that are all underperforming, except for the Dodgers, really. Basically, all of them are underperforming, I think. I think Arizona should be better. I think San Diego should be better. So I'm a little surprised about which teams are performing, which teams are underperforming right now.
Yeah, look, I'll stick for the same theme for mine. I'll just talk about the general underperformance. We have three teams right now that are on pace to be historically bad. The Marlins, White Sox, and Rockies had the first, second, and seventh worst April records in history for any teams that played 25 games. They're terrible. It's curious what happens when the Marlins and Rockies play this week. Do those games just get forfeited at some point? We just guess who wins. And yet with all that, to me, my second big observation would just be about the Astros. They opened the season 9-19. That's winning the two games in Mexico City. I think to this point, you and I have talked about the long season and that they have so many good players and they should have some pitching coming back, right? They got Verlander and Framba Valdez back. Maybe that steadies them. Maybe they could figure out something at first base. They have a prospect coming up about to play a little bit for them. But under a new manager who follows a Hall of Famer in Dusty Baker, who followed an excellent manager in AJ Hinch, Joe Espada has a really tough job here to try to fix this team. The one thing I will say is I thought the West, to your point, would play a little better than this. Over the course of the season, I still think the Rangers are a superb team. The pitching of the Mariners is obviously terrific. I don't think the Astros are out of it, but it's hard to ignore 9-19 in April.
Yeah, I'll say this about the Astros. Obviously, Abreu has been terrible, and Bregman has not been himself, but the injuries are just too much for any team to overcome. They've had seven starting pitchers injured. You know, people could talk about, oh, they should have more depth. I mean, how much depth can you have? I mean, they've got basically nine guys who are viable major league starting pitchers, and they should get Javier back, which would be big. So you got Javier, Fromber, and you've got Verlander and Brown. It should be a pretty good rotation. I'm not counting them out, so I do believe they have a legitimate excuse. Loperfido, the guy they called up, I think that's how you pronounce it, 12 home runs in the minors. I mean, Abreu looks lost. I know Loperfido has been mostly an outfielder, but he can play first. That should be a major improvement just to put anybody in there, because Abreu obviously not doing it. Two observations on a couple of the other teams you mentioned. The Marlins, I mean, they were in the playoffs last year. I don't know. Somebody put a hex on them. I don't know what happened to them.
Based on a lot of one-run games, though, those usually don't translate
from one year to another.
And just the combination of losing Alcantara and Yuri Perez so quickly – it was supposed to be the strength of their team, the starting pitching, right. Terrible defense, not very good offense. And by the way, internally, they could say whatever they want. Once they got rid of Kim, once they brought in somebody from Tampa, they were thinking more about 2025 going forward. And they kind of punted on this season in a lot of ways. And they really now punted on this season. They're even worse than the White Sox right now.
I wouldn't have expected them to be good, but you don't expect a team to go from playoffs, even if they're lucky to be in the playoffs, to all-time bad. It's unlikely. I do think whether they're thinking about some other year, they should have brought in somebody to throw innings. I don't know who's going to throw innings for them. They've got so many pitching injuries now. We all think about all their great pitching development that they do, and they have been great at developing pitching. But now you've got just about all of them have been injured at one point or another, and they're in rough shape. The thing about the Rockies I was going to mention, I saw a stat on them that they've trailed in every game they've played. That's hard to do. I mean, I got to say, I've never heard of that before. When you've played a month of games, and you give them credit, they've come back and win it. What have they won, seven games or something like that? Or
I think
they've come back. Is that right?
Forgive me for it. I'm going to be close. I think there's an easy way to explain it. I think their starting pitching right now is about 1-15 with a 7 ERA.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to ever lead if that's your starting pitching.
But zero games? I mean, you think one game they would have gotten a run in the first inning or something. I don't know.
Go wire,
but
wire.
They've been behind. Yeah. They've been behind in every game. And your explanation is probably the answer. And they fixed that ballpark, right, with the humidor. And should be a little bit better. Of course, they did play two games in Mexico City. I guess they were reenacting their old days or something. Yeah. I don't know. I saw Yordan hit two 461-foot home runs. So,
you have a last one you'd like to hit us with, observation-wise?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's probably the injuries. I mean, sadly, it has been kind of an epidemic. I mean, I don't know how MLB wants to characterize it, but it's unfortunate. I mean, obviously, we talked about the Astros. We talked about the Marlins. They've probably been hit the most of any of the teams, but just about every team has been hit with injuries. And here in New York, the two aces are still out, Senga and Cole, but they haven't had the number of injuries that some of these teams have had. If you've got four, five, six starting pitching injuries, you're in deep trouble, and the Astros have had seven. I mean, it's been a problem, and whoever fixes it may end up, whoever figures it out may end up being the World Series winner. But right now, I don't know that anybody has the answer.
Yeah, I wonder about if you have starting pitching to come. Like Texas should get Scherzer back sometime soon, then maybe Tyler Molly, then maybe Jake DeGrom. Does that help kind of solve it? To your point about Houston, maybe in the second half, do they get Garcia and McCullers back? You know, Tampa Bay hasn't played well, but maybe they're supposed to get Taj Bradley and Shane Baz back soon, and maybe Rasmussen in spring before it's all said and done in the second half. I think that's part of it. You know, John, what I feel is like somebody used a number the other day to show that the pitching injuries aren't significantly different percentage-wise. But I think when we see the Striders go out and the Coles and the Sengas, it's a star league. You know, Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, one of the best. It's like, and you know, you hate when I do this, it's like the NBA playoffs. We have just you know, the stars aren't playing. You know, Butler's not playing. Zion's not playing. Embiid is hurt. You know, these are the star level players. It's a Kawhi. It's you want to see. We're fans also. We want to see the best play. And when we don't see it, it kind of like detracts from the product in general.
Yeah, I think it's beyond the names. I do believe it is the numbers. I mean, you could do anything you want with numbers, but I saw one stat that came out about the first 100-day games or 100 days of MLB. There was a certain number of injuries, and it's only up slightly. Well, at that point, only 22 games have been played, so it shouldn't be up. That's one-fifth of the number of games, right?
Yeah.
So I think there are numbers being thrown out there that are really not telling the story. You can't do a first 100-day stat when you've only played 22 games. That's not the first 100 days. And it was still, you know, they said it wasn't all-time bad or anything like that. Well, it had like, I don't know, like 11 Tommy Johns, and we once had 14 Tommy Johns. Well, that was over 100 days, right? This is over 22 days. Multiply it by at least four, maybe five. So I do think it is the numbers, not just the names, and it is an issue.
Yeah, it's an issue, and it's a topic I'm sure we're going to talk to with our guest, Jeremy Hefner, the pitching coach of the New York Mets. I'm sure we'll also talk Severino, Hauser, Diaz, and more if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Hinkman.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
John and I are so thankful to be joined on the show by Jeremy Hefner, fifth year as pitching coach for the New York Mets. He played with the Mets for two seasons, did this job with the Twins for one. And Jeremy, sometimes when we have a guest, we don't have a lead. So I don't want to bury the lead. We watched Luis Severino almost throw a no-hitter last night, seven innings of really superb ball. And it goes back to something, I think literally on opening day, you and I were talking outside the dugout, and I asked you what you're excited about, and you actually said, I think Severino is Severino, and that he's about to have a good season. Why, what are you seeing, what are you seeing that got him to this point, and why is he doing this?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of things, but mostly, like, he feels good, you know, and he had a... he just had this charisma about him during spring training. His body was feeling good. You know, our performance department did an incredible job with him the moment that we signed him, and we got him in a good place on a good program. And his body's feeling really good. And we know when Sevy's healthy and feeling good, like, he can be one of the best pitchers in baseball. And he had an incredible game last night. The fastball was electric. He was mixing in his breaking stuff when he needed to, and occasional changeup, and he was keeping him off balance, and in a lot of ways, like, overpowering in some stretches.
Reed Garrett, that's another guy. I think you mentioned in spring training, you saw something in Reed Garrett that the rest of us apparently didn't see. I had no idea. I barely knew who he was. And he's been amazing, not just the five wins, which leads the made tied for leading the majors. He's really been dominant in a lot of his performances. How is this happening? I think he is over 30. I don't know if he's 30 or 31, but it's a pretty great story. How did it happen?
Yeah, so it goes back to last year when we claimed him. You know, Eric Jaegers and Jack Bredesen, those are the ones that brought the name to me. And we start to look at him a little bit, and they, you know, we felt like there was some potential here, some untapped potential that you know, we didn't know the player, we didn't know the personality. But we knew if we could, you know, there's some mechanical things that we wanted to do, but also from a pitch mix and pitch shape standpoint, like, if we could hit on these things, like, it could be, I don't think any of us thought, like, 50% strikeout rate in one month good, but we thought, like, he could be a major league reliever. And so it's a credit to those guys, credit to our player development last year, like, and ultimately a credit to Reed buying in, working hard, trusting that when it didn't go well, like, trusting the process, like, let's see this thing through and see what we can do. And And we're reaping the benefits of that. And so you have a highly motivated organization, highly motivated player. And this is kind of one of those best outcome scenarios.
Jeremy, we're just doing a parlor trick here to show you that we're paying attention when you talk, that you, what you told us about Severino and Reed Garrett actually is playing out. And you used a term when you were talking about Severino, where you, in spring training, when I was talking to you, you said, we have the best performance department in baseball. And you use that term, and I think it could get glossed over right now. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? What does it mean to a team when you have that kind of department? And what, in layman's terms, what is it doing to maximize performance?
So we're all experts in our field. We're here for a reason. You know, the Mets have hired us for a reason. And the reason is to make pitchers or try to help them be the best that they can be every single time they toe the slab. So this is athletic trainers. This is physical therapists. This is strength conditioning people. This is biomechanical people. These are mental health, mental performance, like everything that has to do with non pitching related stuff. It's all intertwined, but it's more so like, I'm not an expert on how the knee feels or how the elbow feels or what the elbow looks like under an MRI or anything like that. That's not my expertise. So I need to lean into the guys that are the experts, because I feel like that's how we're going to get the most out of our guys. And so it's a collaborative effort with our whole group in a lot of ways. Like, you know, they deserve way more credit than I do, because like it was much more about that and making sure that he was in a good spot physically. So then I could do my job and help him with his fastball, help him with his sweeper, help him with his sinker. Because if he's not in a decent place physically, like it's harder to work on those types of things. So he feels good. And we were able to work on some things on the pitching side. And so it's a collaborative effort. And I know that word gets thrown around a lot, but I really believe that, like, those guys have a tremendous feel for the human, like what I see and what I'm trying to do. And like, hey, here's my ideas about like how I think I can make this guy better. And then they're like, oh, well, we have some ideas in the weight room that we could do, or in the training room that we could help accentuate the things that you're trying to do on the mound.
Yeah, I had another follow-up on Severino. I saw him last year, and he looked like he was throwing well to me. The radar said 99 or 100, and he was getting hit very, very hard. And there was some whisper about that he was tipping pitches. Do you believe that he was tipping pitches? And did you correct that in some way, or did he correct that?
Yeah, I think there was something like that going on, just in his cadence and how he was kind of going about his delivery and stuff like that, which, you know, some of it you can attribute to tipping, some of it you can attribute to location, some of it sequencing, some of it's like opponent, like those types of things. And, but ultimately I think like the sinker's helping him, like the mix has changed a little bit. Like we changed his sweeper, you know, he used to throw like more of like a slur downer curveball type thing. And like, we're trying to get, you know, a true sweeper, a little bit more lift on that pitch. That I think that's helping him. The carry on the four seamer, which we saw last night, was way better. He can jam the sinker in on righties occasionally, and the slider, which has been his calling card his whole career, is still there. And so I think it was some of that, yes, but it's also like these other things too that we've helped him work on.
You know, the other bit of news as we're talking today from yesterday was that Kodai Senga got on the mound and faced some hitters in batting practice. I think a couple of your minor league guys came over from Brooklyn to face him. I think it was about 20, 21 pitches, if I saw right. He's allowed to come off the injured list on May 27th, the 60-day he has. It always worries me, the shoulder. It's as crazy as it is with all the elbow injuries. Shoulders feel so much more worrisome in some ways. Can you give us an update on where you think he is? And if you think you're going to get the guy we saw last year back, or do shoulders change a pitcher?
Yeah, I think that's all fair. Shoulders are much more complex than the elbow. But like I said earlier, I'm not the expert on shoulders. I just try to, given where he's at in his progression, work on the things that we can work on that we know led to success last year. And Kodai's right where he's supposed to be. He's right on track with, you know, kind of what we planned out from the get-go. And yesterday was a big day for him, and he got to face some hitters. And He showed strong velo. He showed all of his pitch shapes were very similar to what they were last year. He showed good feel for the zone. And now it's just compounding those good days. Yesterday was a good day. Now he's got to come in and have another good day. And we keep doing that over and over and over again. And we're going to look up in another month or so. And like, he's going to be back in the big leagues.
Jose Quintana, I was there the other day, pitched a brilliant outing, probably the best of the season, until Severino last night even bettered him. So we've had two great ones in a row. You know, there aren't these kind of pitchers anymore that throw 90-91 and succeed. Why is he able to do it, and why don't we see that anymore? Because we used to see a lot of guys. I mean, Tom Glavin, who did it without really a great curveball either, and he was able to do it. You know, I think it's beneficial to have these guys because they don't probably get hurt as often. Shouldn't we see more of these guys who can succeed, or are they just eliminated nowadays? He said he didn't think he'd be discovered if he was a prospect throwing 90.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the way the kind of the game has evolved towards stuff and velocity and those types of things. And it's probably, you know, a market correction that we're probably going to undergo, because like these guys do get passed up. The guys that do command the baseball, but maybe don't get as many strikeouts, and maybe they don't get the opportunity that someone who does throw hard, who does get strikeouts, but maybe walks a few more guys or is injury prone or whatever. So maybe there's a shift there. It's certainly something we're thinking about as a group here and making sure we're not missing anything. But specific to Q, like, I think he's top five guy that I've ever had in terms of a human being and work ethic and his craft and what he does for his teammates. And he's the full package for me. And I was, you know, it's been a lot of fun to have a front row seat to watch him the last year or so. And it's all about command with Q. And as long as he's commanding, he's getting in on the righties and opening up his changeup down and away and mixing in a sinker. And it is the old school pitching and being able to move the baseball around. And you saw the Contreras at bat where, like, you know, the at bat before, he went to the curveball and he lined out very hard to the right fielder. And so to have trust in yourself that you can get that pitch below the zone for the punch out in that situation after Mindy went out and get our team through the eighth inning, like, it was those moments are really special, and that's one I'll remember.
Jeremy, you used the term market correction there for wondering if some guys who we used to call crafty finesse pitchers are coming back. I wonder, are you talking about that because you think guys are being missed, or it leads to a big question about this early season, right? Just how many guys have gone down with arm injuries, if there needs to be a correction in philosophy if we want to protect arms going forward. It's a broad question. Take it wherever you want as far as either the injuries or changing the craft to protect it.
Yeah, it's a very difficult question to answer. And hitters have gotten so much better, right? Hitters have adapted. Hitters are always going to be reactive to what the pitchers are doing, right? Pitchers started throwing more four seamers, started throwing at the top of the zone, started throwing harder. All right, well, the hitter's training practices changed, right? Less on-field BP, less slower BP, more like velocity off the machine, more harder breaking balls off the machine. So they're practicing what the pitchers are doing. Now, in terms of health and all those types of things, like, that's difficult. Like, we do an unnatural thing. Anytime you lift your arm above your head and you try to throw something as hard as you possibly can, like, there's always going to be risk for injury. So are we going to mitigate injury? I don't think so. Like, still the fact remains, like, we should try, right? And I think that's kind of where we're at, is like, how do we find the middle ground here where we can still be nasty and, you know, miss bats when we need to miss bats, but also find outs on ground balls or quick outs if the scoreboard says we should try to get quick outs here. So I think it's some of that. I think it's some of, like, learning the game. I think we've gotten away from that a little bit, like, you know, what is the scoreboard telling me to do right here? Is it telling me that I need to go for a strikeout and I need to throw the ball as hard as I possibly can? Or is the scoreboard telling me, like, no, I need to do what's best for the team here and, like, induce some contact and see if I can get through a few innings to help save the bullpen or whatever the case may be. And the market correction piece, you know, some of this is at the amateur level, and I have a 14-year-old son. And so like, I'm, you know, I see it with, you know, adolescents and young teenagers who are trying to throw as hard as they possibly can. And I get it. Like they're trying to get to college and get an opportunity to get their school paid for. And then maybe the potential to play professional baseball and then ultimately like make their dreams is to be a major league pitcher. Right. That's what we're incentivizing is velocity. And so it makes sense why that's all trickled down all the way to the amateur level. But I don't know the answer. Like it's a hard question to answer. And, you know, we're an incentivized people. And so however we're incentivized, like that's how we're gonna follow. And right now we're incentivized to throw hard. So guys are gonna try to throw hard. So maybe there's something that we can do to, it's just the fear is like, if you start to not tackle stuff and not tackle velocity, like you're going to give up more damage because the hitters have gotten so much better. Like if the average velo drops back down to 91, like it was, you know, so many years ago, like, I don't know if that's going to be good for the pitchers in terms of from performance.
You know, fans love prospects. They love to hear about the next big thing. So let me ask you about Christian Scott. I have not seen him. How good is he? How close is he? And is there anybody else that caught your eye in spring training among the young guys?
Yeah, Scotty's in a really good spot. He's throwing the ball really well down in Syracuse. And, you know, this is another similar to Reed Garrett, you know, with Scotty, like reliever out of college. And then we kind of build him up as a starter and give him some weapons to attack hitters. And he's always had a really good fastball, and that's still the case. But he's added the sweeper to go along with his more traditional slider, and the split's really taken a leap forward the last few months that he's been throwing. You know, he's doing exactly what he needs to do. And I think David mentioned it in his presser yesterday, like major league need versus, you know, their prospect development and their trajectory on where they're at in their career arc. And those two kind of have to align sometimes. And so I think that's where we're at right now. And I think that the challenge for Scotty is just continue to be consistent. And like, he's a major league pitcher and his time will come. It's just a matter of when.
You know, the story with the Met pitching this year has been almost overwhelmingly good, Jeremy. It was such a question going into the year. And again, go back to something you were prescient about in spring training. You kept saying our floor has risen a lot, that the front office had done a good job of bringing in pitchers and that you had more depth and good options than in any time in your 5 years. As we stand here now, you're eighth overall in the whole sport in ERA, your bullpen especially. 287 is seventh. Let me ask you about somebody from that bullpen, because Edwin Diaz was such a big story not pitching last year, and he's come back. And I think if he was anyone but Edwin Diaz, we'd go, what a great start that guy is having to his season. But because we know what the history is and we don't see the velocity at the top, or we see a home run like Morel last night, we begin to ask some questions. What are you seeing with expert eyes? And do you think there is that jump to being 2022 Edwin Diaz, where he was the best relief pitcher in the sport?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. I think he can absolutely be what he was in 22. Like, this guy didn't pitch for a full season. And so, like, sometimes those things take time to get, because you can't replicate major league intensity. Like, it doesn't matter, like, in any rehab protocol, like, you can't replicate it. And so sometimes you just have to experience what it's like to hear the trumpets go off or whatever, and hear, you know, have Christian Morel or whoever, like, stand in the box with a chance to hit a home run. Like, you got to feel that over and over and over again. And then you start to get a little bit more comfortable and you start remembering what it was like and what it felt like and what I need to do in those situations. And I would say that, like, even though he gave up the home run yesterday, I feel like he's trending in the right way. Like, the low end, we're not seeing the low end velo that we saw at the beginning of April. Like, he's more in the 97s, 98s consistently. Is he going to throw 102 again? I don't know. Like, does he need to throw 102 again? Probably not. Like he's got one of the best sliders in the game as well. So, and we're seeing less of those 86 mile an hour sliders. And you saw last night, like there were some 90s and 91s and 92s, and we know that's kind of where he was in 22 as well. So, the way that Edwin can turn the page, both good and bad, is very special and what makes him great. And so he's going to come in today and be the same guy and ready to take the ball.
The Mets pitching by and large has been excellent this year. The one guy who really hasn't performed up to what he did in the past is Adrian Hauser, who came over. He was a solid pitcher with the Brewers. He's had a couple of rough ones. What are you seeing there? And we still have faith that he's going to right the ship.
Yeah, definitely. I think Adrian's had spurts of poor performance in his past. So like, this isn't something that this first time experiencing, right? He has some things that he's leaned on in the past that he has to, some check marks that he has to meet to make sure that his delivery's in a good spot, that he's commanding the baseball. You know, and no pitcher likes to hear this. And I don't even really like saying it, but like, he's been a bit unlucky. He's had some cheap hits kind of fall in. He's given up one home run the whole year. He has given up some hard contact, yes, but like I think his sinker versus righties is rocking like an almost 500 BABIP. So like that's not going to continue. Like eventually those balls will get hit at people. And he's a contact oriented pitcher. He's not going to strike out 35%. Like he's going to live, you know, in that 15 to 20% range. And so we got to catch the ball behind him. And the thing that he's got to control is like the walks are elevated, right? So the walks are elevated. He's not getting the first pitch strikes that we've seen in the past. So he's not getting advantage counts. And so he's adding base runners with the walks. And then he's also being unlucky with the batted balls of play. So that's not a combination for not giving up runs. So getting back to controlling what he's controlling, getting an advantage counts, moving a sinker around, like we found some mechanical things that we think might help him. And getting back to some of the things that he did at the end of last year, we think he's in a good spot. Threw his bullpen yesterday and looked really good. So fully expect him to right the ship and be a better version of himself.
Jeremy, as a way to maybe wrap up here, it's interesting. This is your fifth year as the pitching coach, and yet it's your third manager. It's been a run here, maybe even fourth. Were you actually hired when Beltran was very brief? So you never with Beltran, Luis Rojas, who we all like, Buck Showalter, who we've all learned from, and now Carlos Mendoza. I wonder, do you learn from each manager as you're going along here? And what do you, you know, Mendy's a rookie manager. What have you thought of him so far?
Yeah, the answer is yes, because all those individuals are very different in good ways. And they've all had different experiences in the game. And, you know, a lot of people look at that as a negative, right? Because there's flux at the head leadership position on the team and all that kind of stuff. But like, I'm grateful that I've been able to be here for 5 years and had different managers, because I've gotten to learn a lot of different things, right? Like, obviously, Louis is a first time manager, but you know, we had a relationship. I played for him in winter ball, and getting to see the game through his eyes. And then Buck, obviously, like, has seen many, many baseball games and you know, multiple manager year of the awards, like started an organization, like all these types of things. So seeing the game through his eyes and now Mendy as well, like, you know, obviously it's only been a couple months with Mendy, but I really like Mendy's energy. I think he's the same guy every day. It probably helps that he was on the other side of town for a number of years, and he's not going to ride the roller coaster of wins and losses, but sticking to what we know leads to wins, and that's playing good baseball. And at times we have done that this year, and at times we haven't. And but we have to stick to the things that we know and lean into the strengths of our team and do the things that we can control to put ourselves in the best possible position to win. And Mindy's connected well with because there's a lot of people that have been here for 5 years and have experienced the things that I've experienced. And he's connected well with everybody. And now it's just, we got to go out and win baseball games. Cause that's what it's about. You know, we can connect, we can collaborate, we can do all these buzzwords things, but it comes down to winning baseball games and winning a World Series for the Mets fans. And that's what it's about. And that's our goal. That's our drive. That's why I get here at 9 o'clock in the morning and watch video and try to make our guys better. So that's what it's about. That's what Mindy's about. And so now we got to go carry that out.
Hef, you used the word grateful in that answer. And I think, you know, if you noticed how many times John and I referenced something you said to us along the way, you know, we're grateful for the not just the time, but the insight that you offer along the way. There's only one way we could be good for our readers and listeners is that's the people we talk to are as gracious and insightful as you are. And so we're grateful for that. And we're grateful for you joining us here on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
We thank Jeremy Hefner, of course, for joining us on the show. John, hit or error?
I'm going to do a little of each error and then a hit to error for the new uniforms, hit for getting rid of these uniforms. Obviously, there were how many problems were there with this uniform? It wasn't like one thing, right, where they were overexposing people. That was the first issue, but too much sweat. I mean, basically, the injury.
Did they test these things at all?
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of important. Yeah, it's kind of important what they wear on the field, right? And it's like a Costanza thing. What did he
do? Nobody noticed the names were too small. The uniforms ripped too easy. They're sweated through. I mean, did they have anybody run around in them a little bit and go, oh, look at the sweat when they play?
Yeah. You remember the Seinfeld episode with Costanza where the uniforms all got too small because they were all cotton and I don't know. It wasn't that bad, but it was bad, and I'm glad they're correcting it. So you get a hit for that, error for these uniforms, hit for correcting it. So that's my hit and error.
Well, so let's see if I could combine it also. I'm going to give an error for the lack of hits. I wrote about this today for our Post Plus online column is batting average is back down to 240. That's 8 points off of last year. They thought they were starting to make some improvements with the pitch clock, with shifts, etc. And, you know, Jeremy Hefner talked about it, pitching. He talked about hitting getting so good. You know, pitching has just maximized where everybody's out throwing their best stuff at all times. Look, if I were looking for some encouragement, the weather wasn't great in some Northeast places. Usually with warmer weather, the numbers go up. The batting average on balls in play is one of the lowest in history. And so, you know, maybe is that luck or did everyone go to the laboratory in the last year and figure out how to play shifts within the non-shifts and defend a little better? Very smart front offices. But somebody said something interesting to me. They said, you know, the pitch clock is working, but almost nothing else they've done is. And so we're now doing boring quicker. And I'm like, okay, I got it.
How about last night's game? You were the only post person not there. There were eight people there. And that game was 2 hours and 5 minutes.
And the Yankee game was really quick also. I was watching. I was flipping back and forth on both games and watching it from home. There's no doubt the pace is better. And the one other thing, stolen bases went up last year and have stayed up to that level. But the attempt to get the ball in play and have more on-field action – until we figure out how to diffuse some of the pitching, I'm not sure that we could get there just through legislation.
Right. Well, the pace of play, it makes up for everything else for me. So I'm still giving it a hit. I like how you combined that and claimed that was a hit and an error because it was about hits, the lack of hits. To me, that's just an error. But okay.
I was trying to mimic you, John. You were a trendsetter there. You were changing our format.
That was just an error. For the record, you just gave an error.
Well, errors aren't up, but hits remain historically down. This is the second worst batting average except for 1968, John. And that was the year of the pitcher. And
I remember that year. Yeah. I don't remember that year, but
that was
a very, very bad year. Yastrzemski won a batting title at 301. So, I remember it. But you're a young man.
I'm so young. I think you're talking about Mike Yastrzemski. Anyway, we finished a month of baseball, John. We got a lot ahead of us. As always on the show, we want to thank our producers. Who are those, John? Who are our producers?
Dan Shalom, and we have, of course, Jake Brown, as always. He's been there from the beginning. I think those are our producers, but I see another name on there.
Yeah, we could thank Tommy Hogan also, who helps me every week on our Yankee webcast. He comes out helps produce it and does Hogan's analytics. So
we need three. We need extra help, obviously.
Yes. We don't know the difference between a hit and error, apparently.
No, it's all right. Next week.
And we got a lot of stuff to worry about, right? You got to go to our YouTube page if you want to see us. You got to go to Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast to listen to us. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a review. It sure helps. And John, we're off and running a month in the books. Please stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.